Welcome to Family Life Today, presented in cooperation with this station by Power to Change. We hope today's program will give you something to reflect on and to encourage you in your relationships. Our hosts are Dave and Anne Wilson.
All right, yesterday I said I've got two of my favorite thinkers in the studio. I don't know if I agree with that anymore. What do you think?
What do you mean?
They're brilliant.
Yeah?
I underestimated what I'm saying.
Oh, wait, am I your favorite?
Yeah, you're my favorite. And then I got second and third right behind me. Then we got Tim Muehlhaus, Sean McDowell back in the studio to talk about End the Stalemate. If you're trying to have a meaningful conversation with somebody you love, and there is a good relationship, but you believe their point is wrong. It's not just a difference of opinion. And we talked yesterday about understanding their perspective.
You would say it's not biblical even. Maybe even sinful
that they believe this.
Yeah.
And you believe that in your heart of hearts. They're not just a difference of opinion. They are wrong. I am on the side of truth. They're on the side of error and non-truth. And that needs to be stopped. Again, I'm saying this is what's going on in our brain. How do you approach that conversation?
Is the assumption that this person is a Christian?
I would say yes.
Okay.
They're a brother or sister in Christ.
Or a child.
So in my better spirit-filled moments, how I would like to respond is have the thought, there's been a lot of times in my life where I believed and knew I was right, got more information, and it turned out I was wrong. Knowing that wants me to ask a lot more questions, clarify what they mean first, hear them out. That's step number one. So I can think of a lot of times in my life, I've responded back knowing that they're wrong, and then they clarify, go, okay, my bad. I didn't hear you out. I didn't understand, didn't have all the data, et cetera. So let's just make sure we hear people out first. Second thing is communication has three simple pieces. You have the sender, you have the message, and you have the receiver. Most of us think about the message we want to transmit, and we communicate it in a way that makes us feel good. We don't ask the question, how is this message best going to be received? So ask yourself this question. When have I totally believed I'm right about something, and somebody communicates in a way that gets me to rethink and consider another perspective? Does it help when somebody says, McDowell, you're completely wrong. I've studied this. I know. That doesn't help. An insult doesn't help. Tone doesn't help. How do I most help this person reconsider if, in fact, I'm right? And Jesus communicated primarily, he told stories and he asked questions. Between the Gospels and Acts, we have 340 questions that Jesus asked. In Paul's letters, there's 262.
Wow.
So let me make sure I understand your point. Walk me through your evidence for it. Have you considered this other perspective? How would you respond if I made this case? Now, there's a point where I'll try to be as charitable as I can be. And then there does come a point where you say, honestly, I've thought about this more than you have. And that's crazy. And you're digging in heels and you're wrong. But we tend to start there rather than end there.
Would you ever say that you're wrong, or would you say I don't agree?
Well, it depends on the relationship, but those tend to be the exceptions rather than the rule based on a relationship that's there.
Hey, let me just add one thing to what Sean's saying. So let's go to John Gottman real quick, right? We're all fans of Gottman. The first 30 seconds.
Well, tell our listeners a little bit.
John Gottman is probably one of the top relationship experts in the world. He's not a believer.
Right.
So you have to sift it, but everybody uses his research.
Yeah.
Christian
writers
use it all the time. The drop the mic moment from Gottman is the first 30 seconds sets the tone for the entire conversation.
Yep.
So when you prepare your heart, now I'm going to actually jump into this. So imagine, Sean, if what Sean said, you flipped it. You started with the, you're wrong, right? I've studied this. Well, that's going to set it in a negative spiral. And Sean's not advocating that. He's saying, no, tell me what you believe. Clarify your terms. Help me understand your background. We do a whole chapter on surfacing a person's perspective. Like, who are the people you listen to? What books do you read? What TED Talks? What podcasts? Help me understand this background. And then emotionally help me understand your perspective, why you think this is right. And then I would just add, find common ground. because the person's perspective is not wrong A to Z, most likely. I'd find things that I appreciate within their perspective. I love that you care about what the Bible says. I love the fact that you study the Bible. Now, listen, do I ultimately think you're misinterpreting sections of the Bible? I do. But I love the fact that you're studying the Bible and you're rooting your perspective in the Bible. See, this is all starting a positive communication spiral. I would love it if somebody did that with me. But at the end of the conversation, it's what Sean's saying. You have to eventually, you're building the bridge, but you got to send something across the bridge. So now I do say, and honestly, as much as I think I understand what you're saying, I have to say, I do disagree. I might be wrong. I love including that. I might be wrong because I love what you said, Sean. There have been times I've been spectacularly wrong. And I've had to go back and say, wow, I was probably too strident on that. I probably was, because good Christians disagree about a lot of issues.
Amen.
Well, it's interesting. I didn't think of this till you both were just talking about this. Ann and I were speaking last summer in Branson, Missouri area. And we had Saturday afternoon off. We had to speak that night to football coaches from around the country about marriage. It was really a great conference. And they said, hey, there's this Sight and Sound Theater in Branson that has the show Esther. Intermission happens. All of a sudden, this guy sits down right beside me during intermission and leans, like lays on me. And I just turn, I go, dude, what's up? He goes, Dave Wilson. I go, do I know you? He goes, dude, you led me to Christ.
Oh my goodness.
I go, who are you? He goes, you don't remember me. I was at your church in Michigan 20 years ago. I'm the guy that came up to you in the lobby and I was an atheist. I go, dude, I remember that. He goes, I was sitting back there and I saw your bald head. I go, I think that's the guy who led me to Christ. Anyway, here's the story. I'm speaking of this thing, and I say from the stage at one point, I've wrestled with skepticism my whole life. I need evidence and talk about my journey. He walks up to me in the lobby, and there's nobody there, and he goes, I'm an atheist. I don't believe any of this stuff. I'm here because a buddy brought me here, and it sounds like you've had the same kind of journey. I don't think any of this is true. What do you have to say to that? And it was pretty antagonistic at the moment. And I'm thinking about that conversation. I remember I looked at him and I didn't know I was doing what Tim just said. And I said, yeah, who are you reading? Who are you studying? Where do you get your thoughts from? And he started listening off. I go, yeah, I read all those guys. I go, man, they're really good thinkers. They're amazing thinkers. I think they're wrong about some things. You want to talk about it? We had a conversation, probably a 20-minute conversation in a lobby with people walking by him and he came to Christ. As I heard you say it, I was like, part of the reason he wanted to talk is I said what you just said. Tell me about who you're listening to. I didn't demean these guys. You know them all. They're all the thinkers in the atheistic world. And he came to Christ about that. But here's my question. Because when you were talking about all that, I thought when you mentioned Gottman, one of the things that I love that he talks about is contempt.
Oh, yeah.
Because he talks about the things that'll destroy a marriage in any relationship, criticism, but contempt, he says, the biggest one, because it isn't just, I'm critical of your thinking. I think you're an idiot for thinking that. I think my wife is nuts. She's wrong and she's a bad person because of it. Talk about that, because that happens in these conversations. People feel our contempt toward them. They're not just a wrong opinion. We think they're nuts.
I think that's what we're seeing on social media platforms, too.
Oh, this, very much so.
You are the dumbest person.
Let me hand it off to Sean in a second, but we had on Arthur Brooks on our podcast. We do the Winsome Conviction podcast, me and Dr. Rick Langer.
You quote him in the book.
We do.
Yeah.
He's a Harvard researcher, and he said this, America does not have an anger problem. We have a contempt problem. And we said, okay, what's contempt? Yeah. He said, anger is I can be mad at you, but I'm staying in the marriage. I can be mad at you and we're still neighbors. We're still friends. We still go to the same church. Contempt is this church would be better off without you.
Yeah.
This country would be better off without you. That is contempt. He said, contempt is killing this country. And I think back to what Paul said, protect unity. Right? Church at Ephesus. Churches are splitting over everything.
Right.
And I think that's what's killing us today is let's hang into the conversation. Let's remember what unifies us as we go to the points of disagreement. But I think Paul, remember in Romans 14, he's talking to Jewish converts. He's talking to Gentile converts who disagree about days and diets. He says, listen, I'm not going to settle this one, but I do not want you to stop the work of God because of food. And second, I do not want you to have contempt towards each other. I think we're violating Romans 14 all over the place. Mm. So I think it's great when a family member that you really disagree with, I think it's really good before you get to that disagreement to affirm, hey, we're family. Mm. And I remember my mom saying to me, blood is thicker than water. They will always be your brothers. I think that's great to say we're family. Mm. But we do really disagree about this issue. We see it very differently. You quote the Bible, I quote the Bible. We're just going to have to live with this disagreement because we're family.
Yeah, I mean, Sean, you do this better than anybody I know. You don't have
contempt. You navigate it
so
well.
You love them. You're tender. You listen. You're the model.
I don't know about that. I could tell plenty of stories, probably from this week alone, of falling short. Here's the principle I try to live with on contempt. There are people in our culture that have contempt for the Christian faith and Christians because of what we believe. Mm. Whether that's about Jesus, whether that's about marriage, I have no control if someone's going to have contempt for me, and some will. In fact, some have called this an anti-Christian age because of the positions we hold are so intolerant and bigoted on issues of marriage and sexuality. If somebody has contempt for me because I'm being faithful to the message of Jesus, fine. They called Paul delusional. They called him crazy. They crucified Jesus. But if they have contempt because I failed to love people or I'm dying on a secondary issue, then that's on me. And I need to repent of that. It's discouraging and it's distressing, and it literally can be just depressing if I look at the way we communicate in our culture today. I try to bring back and say, what can I control? Am I being faithful? Am I actually loving people? And am I being, one of my principles is I want to be as gracious as I can be without compromising biblical truth.
It's good.
And exactly where that biblical truth is, that's where some of the debate comes in. Fine. But that's my conscience before the Lord. And so I found when people have contempt for me and I say, you know what? I've shown nothing, as far as I can tell, searching my heart, but love for you. And I've stayed faithful to biblical commandments and I've been as gracious as I can be. It hurts, but I can live with that. That's what I would encourage Christians to do. So we also see that within the Christian fold, contempt for other people who have different positions. And I go, you know what? What can I control? Am I being faithful? Am I trying to act in love? People are going to second guess a whole bunch of things. That's all I can control. That's all I'm in charge of. Mm. And I think if more people would just try to frame their conversations that way, I think we'd at least see some progress.
Guys, why are we seeing the contempt today more than ever, it feels like?
I would say tribalism's a huge thing. We are siloed from each other. We don't have commonalities as Americans anymore. When we were in Capitol Hill, we suggested to some Christian leaders reaching across the aisle and go have coffee together. G.K. Chesterton, right, the great defender of the faith, after he would debate H.G. Wells, Rudyard Kipling, they would literally go to the pub. And they would sit in the pub and process the debate and laugh. We actually used that illustration. I'll never forget when high-ranking officials said, have coffee. We don't even share the same elevators.
Wow.
Well, when you don't share the same elevators, when there's no commonality anymore, you demonize the other side because you no longer know anybody from the other side because your group watches all the same news programs. We go to a church that thinks exactly like we do. We only talk to people who think like we do. And we so demonize the other side. When you finally do meet somebody from the other side, you're like, oh, you people are crazy. Like, you're seriously crazy. And I'm going to set you straight because of how crazy you are. And so we really do encourage you need to get used to hearing the other side. It doesn't mean you agree with it. And that's why, again, andthestalemate.com is this website. You're going to listen to two Christians. You're going to disagree maybe with one of them, but get used to that. There's another great website called allsides.com that you go and it presents the left, the right, and the center, the best representatives. We just need to get used to hearing perspectives that's outside of our tribe. And I think, Anne, because of social media, it's so easy to be in that electronic tribe with algorithms and stuff like that. I think that's what's really kind of changed us a little bit is social media has kind of poured some rhetorical gasoline on the fire.
So we really don't hear the other side.
So here's a simple test everybody can do. This is maybe dangerous, but scroll through your podcast and just look and ask yourself, how many support what I already believe? How many sides are against it? Now, it doesn't have to be 50-50, but if you don't have at least some representative podcasts of people who see the world differently, then you're in a silo and everybody else is stupid because they don't see the world as you do. So I think to answer your question, there's a relational piece. If you don't know somebody who sees the world differently, then it's abstract. And so you speak about atheists or Republicans or Democrats or whatever group you want to put people in as an abstract enemy. But when you know Joe or Kim or Barbara or fill in the blank, it becomes personal. So there's a relational piece. There's also an intellectual piece. If you only read books and listen to podcasts that agree with you and follow people on Twitter that agree with you, then of course you're going to think the other side is crazy and have contempt for them for not seeing the right way the world is.
My first week of seminary, I don't remember if it was Scott Ray, who you guys know.
Oh, yeah.
Or J.P.
He's my co-host, by the way. Scott Ray.
Biblically podcast.
Oh, I didn't know Scott.
Yeah,
I
mean, yeah, Scott, for years.
They were teaching at the International School of Theology, where I went in 1982. And one of the classes, I think it was Scott, was on writing and speaking. First day of class, I'll never forget, he said, hey, don't just read the Bible. Don't just read Christian thinkers. You want to read the best writers in the country? Read Sports Illustrated. I go, what? And somebody in our class actually raised their hand and said, no, I don't really want to read that stuff. It's non-Christian thinking. I want to keep my mind pure. And he goes, yeah, you need to know what non-Christians think. And they're really good writers.
Why don't we read other sides?
Why don't we?
I think a big reason is we're insecure in our own position. And we're threatened by people who see the world differently. So I do this thing, this atheist role play, where I put on glasses and I role play an atheist and I take questions, respond as an atheist could. And then when I'm done, people get defensive, they get angry, they call me names. It's crazy. And the first question I typically ask is how did you treat your atheist guest? And the eyes are like, you got me. I'll say, give me individual words that describe the way you treated me. One of the most common words is hostile, comes up all the time, and defensive. I say, well, why do we get defensive? Well, if you don't know what you believe and why you believe it, we're defensive at somebody else who sees the world differently. So if you only listen to people who agree with your side, you probably have no depth. You probably don't really know what you believe and why you believe it. So you just want people to reinforce your shallow convictions. But if we're supposed to care about truth, we shouldn't be threatened by people who see the world differently.
I think it's good. Like, we've gotten into the practice. I probably, me more than you, Dave, just because I'm a book reader and listener. But asking our kids.
And I'm not. There you go. There you go.
I mean, non-fiction. I would read more. Shoot, that's
first
bad.
30 seconds.
Wait, fiction. Yeah.
So our book doesn't count. Then. I'm kidding.
Daydreaming your book. So I'll ask our kids, like, hey, guys, what are you reading right now?
Yes.
What are you listening to right now? What
that's
are you
good.
Watching?
That's good.
And then tell me one of the things that I should listen to or watch that you have loved. And that's always a little risky because you and I may hate them. But I like that they're willing, like, oh, mom, you're going to like listen to this or watch this or tell me what you think of this. I love that. And you do that too, Dave.
He's trying to put me back. I think one of the, and what's what you guys are saying, I love hearing differing opinions. I love hearing contrary thoughts on really important issues. I want to understand and dialogue about that.
And you've been amazing with our kids about that.
Oh, I want to do. I remember, you know, as a guitar player when they were teenagers listening to music, I'm like, hey, I want to learn this song and know why you like it.
I'm like, this is a Satan, and I'd throw it in the garbage. And so Dave was a really good balance for me of watching him say, tell me why you love this guy. Tell me what is it that draws you to him. You're really good at that.
So you're a rarity, though. In cancel culture today, Dave, you both would be a rarity. So we had a pastor on our podcast who drew a circle around his church, a 10-mile radius, and said, I'm going to engage every religious leader in this 10-mile radius because we're not going to be in a cocoon anymore. We're going to engage. So he did. There was a mosque. By the way, Sean just did a great series where you went to a mosque and you went to a Hindu temple to do perspective taking. Oh, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
He did a great
job.
So he had these right people and would engage them and got more pushback of people saying, why would we give the platform to this person? Why would I fill my head with those unbiblical thoughts? And all I can say is when Paul in Acts 17, he's going to address the men of Athens. By the way, listen to his first 30 seconds. He chooses to say, men of Athens, I observe you're very religious in many ways.
Isn't he a master of communication?
And then he quotes a poet. He quotes one of their poets. So I do think we need
Which would be a secular person.
Yes, but we need to be careful, right? Again, our students, when we have them do these perspective taking exercises, they are under our tutelage. We're not just throwing them to the wolves. We're teaching them skills and then we're having them do it. And again, go to endthestalemate.com. We're giving you skills. We're not just launching you into this perspective.
And then you even say in the book, you don't do this with first year students.
Yeah, I'm careful.
I teach
a very controversial class called Engaging Diverse Perspectives. Now, again, these are seniors. This is a 400-level class. My goodness, if the seniors are not ready for this, if the seniors aren't ready for this, we got problems. So, yeah, you raise your kids because you have the long view. We're slowly introducing them to topics. Then I think you really kick it in when high school comes. We're talking about things. We're watching news programs we don't traditionally agree with. We're doing it as a family, and the kids are used to listening to counter perspectives. So it's a slow way to bring them. But I think we need to just really start thinking about our kids. Is our family a cocoon? Like, are we really isolated from people that we disagree with?
Mm. Yeah, and I would say tomorrow, because we're going to have another day on this, how do we have the dinner conversation? Mm. We've talked pre. We need to talk in the moment and also post.
Yeah.
But walk us through the actual conversation, because when we get in it, sometimes things happen in real time and you don't follow the plan you pre-set up, and then it gets ugly. So help us.
We'd love to.
We want to thank Dave and Ann Wilson and their team for another edition of Family Life Today. Although our programs are produced in America, the issues facing families like forgiveness, communication, and taking care of our kids transcend national borders. These issues profoundly affect relationships everywhere. In Australia, family life is known as Power to Change, and our mission is to effectively develop godly families, the kind of families that change the world one home at a time. A key part of our mission includes strengthening marriages and families all around the world. We want to do whatever we can to bring timeless truths to the challenges you face as you seek to strengthen your family and join us in changing the world. If you'd like to listen to today's program again, visit our website families.powertochange.org.au and select the podcast tab where you will find the previous fortnight's programs available. Until tomorrow at the same time, God's richest blessings on your family.